she said. He chose his words carefully.
Information like that can be tracked, he pointed out. If you get a license, people might be able to find you.
I'm already using a safe social security number, she said. If Kevin knew about it, he would have tracked me down already. And if I'm going to stay in Southport, it's something I need to do. He shook his head.
Katie.
She leaned over and kissed him on the cheek. It's okay, she said. My name's not Katie, remember? He traced the curve of her cheek with his finger.
To me, you'll always be Katie.
She smiled. I have a secret, she said. My hair isn't naturally brown. I'm really a blonde. He sat back, processing this new information.
Are you sure you want to be telling me this?
I figure you'll find out eventually anyway. Who knows? Maybe I'll go back to being a blonde one day.
What's this all about? Wanting to learn to drive? Volunteering information?
You told me I could trust you, she shrugged. I believe you.
That's it?
Yes, she said. I feel like I can tell you anything. He studied their hands, locked together on the seat divider, before looking at her.
Then I'll cut to the chase. Are you sure your documents will hold up? They can't be copies. They have to be originals.
I know, she said. He knew better than to ask anything more. He reached for the keys, but didn't start the engine. What is it? She asked.
Since you want to learn how to drive, we may as well start now.
He opened the door and got out.
Let's get you behind the wheel.
They switched places. As soon as Katie was behind the wheel, Alex pointed out the basics. Gas and brake pedals, how to put the car in gear, turn signals, lights and wipers, gauges on the dashboard. It was always best to start at the beginning.
You ready?
He asked. I think so, she said, concentrating.
Since it's not a manual transmission, you only use one foot. It's either on the accelerator or the brake, okay?
Okay, she said. She moved her left foot near the door.
Now, push down on the brake and start the car. When you're ready, keep the brake on while you put the transmission in reverse. Don't use the accelerator and slowly release the brake. Then turn the wheel to back out, keeping your foot lightly on the brake.
She did exactly as she was told and backed the car out gingerly before he guided her out of the parking lot. For the first time, she paused. Are you sure I should drive onto the main road?
If there was a lot of traffic, I'd say no. If you were 16, I'd say no. But I think you can handle it, and I'm right here to help. You ready? What you're going to do is turn right, and we'll follow that until the next turn. Then we'll turn right again. I want you to get a feel for the car.
They spent the next hour driving along rural roads. Like most beginners, she had trouble with oversteering. She sometimes veered onto the shoulder, and parking took a little while to get used to. But other than that, she did better than probably either of them expected. As they were getting close to finishing, Alex had her park on one of the downtown streets. Where are we going? He pointed to a small coffee shop.
I figured you might want to celebrate. You did well.
I don't know, she said. I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing.
That comes with practice, he said. The more you drive, the more natural it feels.
Can I drive tomorrow? She asked.
Of course, he said. Can we do it in the morning, though? Now that Josh is out of school, he and Kristen are at day camp for a couple of weeks. They get home around noon.
Mornings are perfect, she said. Do you really think I did okay?
You could probably pass the driving portion of the exam with a couple more days of practice. Of course, you have to pass the written test, too, but all that takes is some prep time.
She reached out and gave him a spontaneous hug. Thanks for this, by the way. He hugged her back.
I'm glad to help. Even if you don't have a car, it's something you should probably know how to do. Why didn't you
learn to drive when I was younger? She shrugged. Growing up, We had only one car, and my dad was usually using it. Even if I got my license, I wouldn't have been able to drive, so it never struck me as all that important. After I moved out, I couldn't afford a car, so again, I didn't bother. And then, when I was married, Kevin didn't want me to have one. She turned. And here I am, a 27-year-old bike rider.
You're 27?
You knew that.
Actually, I didn't.
And?
You don't look a day over 30.
She punched him lightly in the arm. For that, I'm going to make you buy me a croissant, too.
Fair enough. And since you're in the mood for full disclosure, I'd like to hear the story of how you finally got away.
She hesitated, only briefly. Okay, she said. At a small table outside, Katie related the account of her escape. The forwarded phone calls, the trip to Philadelphia, the ever-changing jobs and miserable flop houses, the eventual trip to Southport. Unlike the first time, now she was able to describe her experiences calmly, as though talking about someone else. When she finished, he shook his head. What?
I was just trying to imagine how you must have felt after hanging up on that final call from Kevin, when he still thought you were at home. I'll bet you were relieved.
I was, but I was also terrified. And at that point, I still didn't have a job and didn't know what I was going to do.
But you made it.
Yes, she said. I did. Her gaze was focused on some distant point. It's not the kind of life I ever imagined for myself. Alex's tone was gentle.
I'm not sure anyone's life turns out exactly the way they imagine. All we can do is try to make the best of it, even when it seems impossible.
She knew he was talking as much about himself as he was about her, and for a long moment, neither of them said anything.
I love you,
he finally whispered. She leaned forward and touched his face. I know, and I love you too. Chapter 26. By late June, the flower gardens in Dorchester that had been ablaze with color in the spring were beginning to wilt, the blooms turning brown and curling inward. The humidity had begun to creep up, and the alleys in downtown Boston began to smell of rotting food and urine and decay. Kevin told Coffey and Ramirez that he and Aaron were going to spend the weekend at home, watching movies and doing a little gardening. Coffey had asked about Provincetown, and Kevin had lied and told him about the bed and breakfast where they'd stayed and some of the restaurants they'd gone to. Coffey had said that he'd been to all of those places and asked if Kevin had ordered the crab cakes at one of them. Kevin said that he hadn't, but would the next time. Aaron was gone, but Kevin still looked for her everywhere. He couldn't help it. As he drove the streets of Boston and saw the glint of gold brushing a woman's shoulders, he would feel his heart catch in his throat. He would watch for the delicate nose and green eyes and the graceful way she walked. Sometimes he would stand outside the bakery, pretending that he was waiting for her. He should have been able to find her, even if she'd gotten away in Philadelphia. People left trails, paper left trails. In Philadelphia, she'd used a phony name and phony social security number, but that couldn't last forever, unless she was willing to keep on living in cheap hotels and changing jobs every few weeks. To this point, though, she hadn't used her own social security number. An officer from another precinct who had connections checked for him, and that officer was the only one who knew that Aaron was gone, but he'd kept his mouth shut because Kevin knew he was having an affair with his underage babysitter. Kevin felt dirty whenever he had to talk to him because the guy was a pervert and he belonged in prison, since the Bible says, "Let there be no sexual immorality among you." But right now, Kevin needed him so that he could find Aaron and bring her home. Man and wife were supposed to stay together because they made their vows in front of God and family. He'd known he would find her in March. He'd felt sure she would turn up in April. He was certain that her name would surface in May, but the house stayed empty. Now it was June, and his thoughts were often scattered, and sometimes it was all he could do to go through the motions. It was hard to concentrate,
and the vodka didn't seem to help, and he had to lie to Coffee and Ramirez and walk away while they gossiped. This he knew. She wasn't running any longer. She wouldn't move from place to place or job to job forever. It wasn't like her. She liked nice things and wanted to have them around her, which meant she had to be using someone else's identity. Unless she was willing to live a life continually on the run, she needed a real birth certificate and a real social security number. These days, employers required identification. But where and how would she have assumed another's identity? He knew the most common way was to find someone of a similar age who'd recently died, and then to take on the identity of the deceased. The first part of that was conceivable, if only because of Aaron's frequent visits to the library. He could imagine her scanning the obituaries on microfiche, looking for a name to steal. She schemed and planned in the library while pretending to peruse the bookshelves, and she'd done those things after he'd taken time out of his busy day to drive her there. He showed her kindness, and she repaid him with treachery, and it infuriated him to think of the way she must have laughed while she did it. It made him so angry to imagine those things, and with a hammer he smashed the set of china they'd been given for their wedding. Having let off steam, he was able to focus on what he had to do. Throughout March and April, Kevin spent hours in the library, just as she must have done, trying to find her new identity. But even if she had found a name, how had she retrieved the identification? Where was she now? And why hadn't she come home? These were the questions that tormented him. And sometimes it was so confusing he couldn't stop crying because he missed her and wanted her to come home, and he hated to be alone. But other times, the thought that she had left him made him dwell on how selfish she was, and all he wanted to do was kill her. July rolled in with the breath of dragons, hot and moist, and horizons that shimmered like a mirage when seen from a distance. The holiday weekend passed, and another week started. The air conditioner had broken in his home, and Kevin hadn't called the repairman. He had a headache every morning when he went to work. Trial and error proved that vodka worked better than Tylenol, but the pain was always there, pounding in his temple. He'd stopped going to the library, and Coffee and Ramirez asked about his wife again, and he said that she was fine, but said nothing else about her, and then he changed the subject. He got a new partner named Todd Vanerdy, who'd just been promoted. He was happy to let Kevin do most of the questioning when they talked to witnesses and victims, and that was fine with Kevin. Kevin told him that almost always the victim knew the murderer, but not always in an obvious way. At the end of their first week together, they were called out to an apartment less than 3 blocks from the precinct, where they found a 10-year-old boy who'd died of a bullet wound. The shooter was a recent emigrant from Greece who had been celebrating a Greek soccer victory when he'd fired his gun at the floor. The bullet passed through the ceiling of the apartment below him and killed the boy just as he was taking a bite of pizza. The bullet entered the top of his head, and the boy fell face first into his pizza. When they saw the boy, there was cheese and tomato sauce on the boy's forehead. His mother had screamed and cried for 2 hours and had tried to tackle the Greek as he was led down the stairs in handcuffs. She ended up tumbling down to the landing, and they'd had to call an ambulance. Kevin and Todd went to a bar after their shift ended, and Todd tried to pretend he could forget what he'd seen, but he drank 3 beers in less than 15 minutes. He told Kevin that he'd failed his detective exam once, before finally passing it. Kevin drank vodka, though because Todd was with him, he told the bartender to add a splash of cranberry juice. It was a cop bar. Lots of cops, low prices, dim lights, and women who liked to hook up with cops. The bartender let people smoke, even though it was against the law, since most of the smokers were cops. Todd wasn't married and had been there often. Kevin had never been there before and wasn't sure he liked it, but he didn't want to go home either. Todd went to the bathroom, and when he came back, he leaned closer to Kevin. "I think those two at the end of the bar are checking us out."
Kevin turned. Like him, the women appeared to be around 30. The brunette noticed him staring before she turned back to her red-headed friend.
Too bad you're married, huh? They look pretty good.
They looked worn, Kevin thought. Not like Aaron, who had clear skin and smelled of lemon and mint and the perfume he'd bought her for Christmas.
Go ahead and talk to them if you want, Kevin said. I think I will, Todd said.
Todd ordered another beer and walked to the end of the bar and smiled. He probably said something stupid, but it was enough to make the women laugh. Kevin ordered a double vodka, no cranberry juice, and saw their reflection in the mirror behind the bar. The brunette met his eyes in the mirror, and he didn't turn away. 10 minutes later, she sauntered over and took a seat on the stool that Todd had been occupying.
Not feeling social tonight? The brunette asked. I'm not good at small talk.
The brunette seemed to consider this.
I'm Amber, she said.
Kevin, he replied, and again he didn't know what to say. He took a drink, thinking it tasted almost like water. The brunette leaned toward him. She smelled musky, not like lemon and mint.
Todd says that the two of you work homicide.
We do.
Is that hard?
Sometimes, he said.
He finished his drink and raised the glass. The bartender brought another over.
What do you do?
I'm an office manager at my brother's bakery. He makes rolls and bread products for restaurants.
That sounds interesting.
She gave a cynical smile. No, it doesn't, and it's not, but it pays the bills. Her teeth flashed white in the gloom.
I haven't seen you here before.
Todd brought me.
She nodded in Todd's direction.
Him I've seen. He hits on anything in a skirt who's still breathing, and I think the breathing part is optional.
My friend loves it here, but usually I can't stand the place. She makes me come with her.
Kevin nodded and shifted on his stool. He wondered if Coffee and Ramirez ever came here.
Am I boring you? She asked. I can leave you alone if you'd like. You're not boring me.
She flipped her hair, and Kevin thought she was prettier than he'd first realized.
Would you like to buy me a drink? She suggested. What would you like?
Cosmopolitan, she said, and Kevin signaled to the bartender. The Cosmopolitan arrived.
I'm not very good at this, Kevin admitted.
Not good at what?
This.
We're just talking, she said. And you're doing fine.
I'm married.
She smiled.
I know. I saw your ring.
Does that bother you?
Like I said, we're just talking.
She ran a finger along her glass, and he could see the moisture collect on the tip.
Does your wife know you're here? She asked.
My wife is out of town, he said. Her friend is sick, and she's helping her out.
And so you thought you'd hit the bars? Meet some women?
I'm not like that. Kevin said tightly. I love my wife.
You should, since you married her, I mean.
He wanted another double vodka, but didn't want to order it in front of her, since he'd already done so. Instead, as if reading his mind, she signaled to the bartender, and he brought over another one. Kevin took a large gulp, still thinking it tasted like water.
Is it okay that I did that? She asked.
It's okay, he said.
She stared at him, her expression sultry.
I wouldn't tell your wife that you were here, if I were you.
Why not?
He asked.
Because you're way too handsome for a place like this. You never know who would try to hit on you.
Are you hitting on me?
It took her a moment to answer.
Would you be offended if I said yes?
He spun the glass slowly on the bar.
No. He said. I wouldn't be offended.
After drinking and flirting for another 2 hours, they ended up at her place. Amber understood that he wanted to be discreet and gave him her address. After Amber and her friend left, Kevin stayed in the bar with Todd for another half hour before he told Todd that he had to get home so he could call Aaron. When he drove, the world blurred around the edge of his vision.
His thoughts were jumbled and confusing, and he knew he was swerving, but he was a good detective. Even if he was stopped, he wouldn't be arrested because cops don't arrest other cops. And what were a few drinks? Amber lived in an apartment a few blocks away from the bar. He knocked at the door, and when she opened it, she was wearing nothing beneath the sheet she had wrapped around her. He kissed her and carried her to the bedroom and felt her fingers unbuttoning his shirt. He placed her on the bed and undressed and turned out the light because he didn't want to be reminded that he was cheating on his wife. Adultery was a sin, and now that he was here, he didn't want to have sex with her, but he'd been drinking and the world appeared smudged and she'd been wearing nothing except a sheet and it was all so confusing. She wasn't like Aaron. Her body was different, her shape was different, and her scent was different. She smelled spicy, animal-like almost, and her hands moved too much, and everything with Amber was new and he didn't like it, but he couldn't stop either. He heard her calling out his name and saying dirty things, and he wanted to tell her to shut up so he could think about Aaron, but it was hard to concentrate because everything was so confusing. He squeezed her arms and heard her gasp and say, "Not so hard," and he loosened his grip, but then he squeezed her arms again because he wanted to. This time she said nothing. He thought about Aaron and where she was and whether she was okay, and thought again about how much he missed her. He shouldn't have hit Aaron because she was sweet and kind and gentle, and she didn't deserve to be punched or kicked. It was his fault she was gone. He'd driven her away, even though he loved her. He'd searched for her and hadn't been able to find her, and he'd been to Philadelphia, and now he was with a woman named Amber who didn't know what to do with her hands and made strange noises. And it felt all wrong. When they were done, he didn't want to stay. Instead, he got out of bed and started to get dressed. She turned on the lamp and sat up in bed. The sight of her reminded him that she wasn't Aaron, and he suddenly felt sick to his stomach. The Bible says, "The man who commits adultery is an utter fool, for he destroys his own soul." He had to get away from Amber. He didn't know why he'd come, and as he stared at her, his stomach was in knots. "Are you okay?" she asked. "I shouldn't be here," he said. "I shouldn't have come."
"It's a little late now," she said.
"I have to go."
"Just like that?"
"I'm married," he said again.
"I know."
She gave a weary smile.
"And it's okay."
"No, it's not," he said. And after getting dressed, he left her apartment and raced down the steps and jumped in his car. He drove fast but didn't swerve because the guilt he felt was like a sharp tonic to his senses. He made it home and saw a light on at the Feldmans and knew they would peek out their window as he pulled in his driveway. The Feldmans were bad neighbors and never waved at him and told kids to stay off their lawn. They would know what he'd done because they were bad people. And he had done a bad thing, and birds of a feather flocked together. When he went inside, he needed a drink, but the thought of vodka made him sick, and his mind was racing. He'd cheated on his wife, and the Bible says his shame will never be erased. He'd broken a commandment of God and broken his vow to Aaron, and he knew the truth would come out. Amber knew, and Todd knew, and the Feldmans knew. And they'd tell someone who'd tell someone else, and Aaron would learn what he had done. He paced the living room, his breaths coming fast because he knew he wouldn't be able to explain it to Aaron in a way she would understand. She was his wife, and she would never forgive him. She'd be angry, and she'd tell him to sleep on the couch, and in the morning she would look at him with disappointment because he was a sinner, and she would never trust him again. He shivered, feeling nauseated. He slept with another woman, and the Bible says, "Have nothing to do with sexual sin, impurity, lust, and shameful desires." It was all so confusing, and he wanted to stop thinking, but he couldn't. He wanted to drink, but he couldn't, and he had the feeling that Aaron would suddenly appear at their doorstep.
The house was messy and dirty, and Aaron would know what he'd done. And even though his thoughts were jumbled, he knew those two things were linked. He paced the living room frantically. Dirty and cheating were linked because cheating was dirty. And Aaron would know that he'd cheated because the house was dirty, and the two of them went together. Suddenly, he stopped pacing, and he strode to the kitchen and found a garbage bag beneath the sink. In the living room, he dropped to his knees and crawled around, filling it with empty takeout containers and magazines and plastic utensils and empty bottles of vodka and pizza boxes. It was well past midnight, and he didn't have to work in the morning. So he stayed awake cleaning the house and doing the dishes and running the vacuum that he'd bought for Aaron. He cleaned so she wouldn't know, because he knew that cheating and dirty went together. He put the dirty clothes in the washer, and when they were done, he dried them and folded them while other loads were washing and drying. The sun came up, and he pulled the cushions from the sofa and vacuumed until all the crumbs were gone. As he worked, he glanced out the window, knowing Aaron would be home any minute. He scrubbed the toilet and washed the food stains from the refrigerator and mopped the linoleum. Dawn turned to morning, and then to late morning. He washed the sheets and opened the drapes and dusted the frame that held the photograph of their wedding day. He mowed the lawn and emptied the clippings in the garbage can, and when he was done, he went shopping and bought turkey and ham and Dijon mustard and fresh rye bread from the bakery. He bought flowers and set them on the table. He added candles. When he was finished, he was breathing hard. He poured himself a tall, icy glass of vodka and sat at the kitchen table and waited for Aaron. He was happy because he'd cleaned the house, because it meant that Aaron would never know what he'd done, and they would have the kind of marriage he'd always wanted. They would trust each other and be happy, and he would love her forever. And never cheat on her again. Because why on earth would he ever do something as disgusting as that? Chapter 27. Katie got her driver's license in the second week of July. In the days leading up to her test, Alex had taken her driving regularly, and despite some pre-test jitters, she passed with a nearly perfect score. The license arrived in the mail within a few days, and when Katie opened the envelope, she felt almost dizzy. There was a photograph of her next to a name she'd never imagined having. But according to the state of North Carolina, she was as real as any other resident of the state. That night, Alex took her to dinner in Wilmington. Afterward, they'd walked the downtown streets holding hands and browsing the shops. Every now and then, she saw Alex regarding her with amusement.
What? She finally demanded.
I was just thinking that you don't look like an Aaron. You look like a Katie.
I should look like a Katie, she said. That's my name, and I've got a driver's license to prove it.
I know you do, he said. Now all you need is a car.
Why do I need a car? She shrugged. It's a small town, and I've got a bike. And when it's raining, there's this guy who's willing to drive me anywhere I need to go. It's almost like having a chauffeur.
Really?
Uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure that if I asked, he'd even let me borrow his car. I have him wrapped around my little finger.
Alex cocked an eyebrow. He doesn't sound like much of a man.
He's all right, she teased. He seemed a little desperate in the beginning, what with all the freebies he gave me, but I eventually got used to it.
You have a heart of gold.
Obviously, she said. I'm pretty much one in a million.
He laughed. I'm beginning to think that you're finally coming out of your shell, and I'm beginning to glimpse the real you.
She walked a few steps in silence. You know the real me, she said, stopping to peer up at him, more than anyone else.
I know, he said, pulling her toward him. And that's why I think that somehow we were meant to find each other.
Though the store was as busy as ever, Alex took a vacation. It was his first in a while, and he spent most afternoons with Katie and the kids, relishing the lazy days of summer in a way he hadn't since childhood. He fished with Josh and built dollhouses with Kristen.
He took Katie to a jazz festival in Myrtle Beach. When the fireflies were out in force, they caught dozens with nets and put them in a jar. Later that night, they watched the eerie glow with a mixture of wonder and fascination before Alex finally opened the lid. They rode their bikes and went to the movies, and when Katie wasn't working evenings, Alex liked to fire up the grill. The kids would eat and then swim in the creek until it was almost dark. After they'd showered and gone to bed, Alex would sit with Katie on the small dock out back, their legs dangling over the water, while the moon slowly traversed the sky. They sipped wine and talked about nothing important, but Alex grew to savor those quiet moments together. Kristen particularly loved spending time with Katie. When the four of them were walking together, Kristen often reached out for Katie's hand. When she fell down in the playground, she'd begun to run to Katie. While it warmed Alex's heart to see those things, he always felt a pang of sadness, too, because it reminded him that he could never be everything that his daughter needed, no matter how hard he tried. Still, when Kristen came running up to him and asked if Katie could take her shopping, Alex couldn't say no. Though Alex made a point to take her shopping once or twice a year, he tended to view it more as a parental duty than an opportunity for fun. By contrast, Katie seemed delighted by the idea. After giving Katie some money, Alex handed her the keys to the Jeep and waved from the parking lot as they left. As happy as Katie's presence had made Kristen, Josh's feelings weren't quite as obvious. The day before, Alex had picked him up from a friend's swimming party, and he hadn't said anything to either Katie or Alex the rest of the evening. Earlier at the beach, he'd been subdued as well. Alex knew that something was bothering him and suggested that they get out their fishing poles, just as dusk was settling in. Shadows began to stretch across the blackened water, and the creek was still, a darkened mirror reflecting the slowly drifting clouds. They cast their lines for an hour while the sky turned violet, then indigo, the lures making circular ripples as they splashed into the water. Josh remained strangely quiet. At other times, the tableau might have seemed peaceful, but now Alex had the nagging feeling that something was wrong. Just when he was about to ask Josh about it, however, his son half swiveled in his direction.
Hey, Dad?
Yeah?
Do you ever think about Mom?
All the time, he said.
Josh nodded.
I think about her, too.
You should. She loved you very much. What do you think about?
I remember when she made us cookies. She let me put the frosting on.
I remember that. You had pink frosting all over your face. She took your picture. It's still on the refrigerator.
I think that's why I remember.
He propped the rod in his lap.
Do you miss her?
Of course I do. I loved her very much, Alex said, holding Josh's gaze. What's going on, Josh?
At the party yesterday.
Josh rubbed his nose, hesitating.
What happened?
Most of the moms stayed the whole time, talking and stuff.
I would have stayed if you wanted me to.
Josh dropped his eyes, and in the silence, Alex suddenly knew what he hadn't said.
I was supposed to stay too, wasn't I? Some parent-child thing.
His tone was more a statement than a question.
But you didn't want to tell me because I would have been the only dad there, right?
Josh nodded, looking guilty.
I don't want you to be mad at me.
Alex slipped an arm around his son.
I'm not mad, he said.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. I couldn't be mad at you for that.
Do you think Mom would have gone if she was still here?
Of course she would have. She wouldn't have missed it.
On the far side of the creek, a mullet jumped and the tiny ripples began moving toward them.
What do you do when you go out with Miss Katie? He asked.
Alex shifted slightly.
It's kind of like what we did at the beach today. We eat and talk and maybe go for a walk.
You've been spending a lot of time with her lately.
Yes.
Josh considered that.
What do you talk about?
Just regular stuff.
Alex tilted his head.
And we talk about you and your sister, too.
What do you say?
We talk about how much fun it is to spend time with you two, and how well you did in school, or how good you are at keeping your room clean.
Will you tell her that I didn't tell you that you were supposed to stay at the party?
Do you want me to?
No, he said.
Then I won't say anything.
Promise? Because I don't want her to be mad at me.
Alex raised his fingers.
Scout's honor. But just so you know, she wouldn't be mad at you even if I did. She thinks you're a great kid.
Josh sat up straighter and began reeling in his line.
Good, he said. Because I think she's pretty great too.
The conversation with Josh kept Alex awake that night. He found himself studying the portrait of Carly in his bedroom as he sipped his third beer of the evening. Kristen and Katie had returned to the house, full of energy and excitement as they showed him the clothes they'd purchased. Surprisingly, Katie had returned nearly half the money, saying only that she was pretty good at finding things on sale. Alex sat on the couch as Kristen modeled an outfit for him, only to vanish back into her bedroom before returning something completely different. Even Josh, who ordinarily wouldn't have cared in the slightest, set his Nintendo game aside, and when Kristen had left the room, he approached Katie.
Could you take me shopping, too?
He asked, his voice barely above a whisper.
Because I need some new shirts and stuff.
Afterward, Alex ordered Chinese food, and they sat around the table, eating and laughing. At one point during dinner, Katie pulled a leather wristband from her purse and turned toward Josh.
I thought this was pretty cool looking, she said, handing it to Josh.
His surprise gave way to pleasure as he put it on, and Alex noticed how Josh's eyes continually flickered toward Katie for the rest of the evening. Ironically, it was at times like tonight that he missed Carly most. Even though she'd never experienced nights like these as a family, the kids were too young when she died. He found it easy to imagine her being at the table. Perhaps that was the reason he couldn't sleep, long after Katie went home and Kristen and Josh were asleep in their beds. Tossing back the covers, he went to the closet and opened the safe he'd installed a few years earlier. In it were important financial and insurance documents, stacked beside treasures from his marriage. There were items that Carly had collected, photos from their honeymoon, a four-leaf clover they'd found while vacationing in Vancouver, the bouquet of peonies and calla lilies she'd carried on her wedding day, ultrasound images of Josh and Kristen while each was still in her womb, along with the outfits that each had worn on the way home from the hospital, photo negatives and camera discs, chronicling their years together. The articles were heavy with meaning and memories. And since Carly's death, Alex had added nothing to the safe, except for the letters that Carly had written. One had been addressed to him. The second had no name on it, however, and it remained unopened. He couldn't open it. A promise, after all, was a promise. He pulled out the letter he'd read 100 times, leaving the other in the safe. He'd known nothing about the letters until she'd handed the envelopes to him less than a week before she died. By that point, she was bedridden and could only sip liquids. When he carried her to the bathroom, she was light, as if somehow she'd been hollowed out. He spent her few waking hours sitting quietly beside her. Usually, she would fall asleep again within minutes, and Alex would stare at her, afraid to leave in case she needed him, and afraid to stay in case he might rob her of rest. On the day she gave him the envelopes, he saw that they had been tucked into the blankets, appearing as if by magic. Only later would he learn that she'd written them 2 months earlier, and her mom had been holding them. Now, Alex opened the envelope and pulled out the much-handled letter. It was written on yellow legal paper. Bringing it to his nose, he was still able to discern the scent of the lotion she often wore. He remembered his surprise and the way her eyes pleaded with him for understanding.
You want me to read this one first?
He remembered asking. He pointed to the one inscribed with his name, and she nodded slightly. She relaxed as he pulled the letter out, her head sinking into the pillow. My dearest Alex, there are dreams that visit us and leave us fulfilled upon waking. There are dreams that make life worth living. You, my sweet husband, are that dream. and it saddens me to have to put into words the way I feel about you. I'm writing this letter now, while I still can, and yet I'm not sure how to capture what I want to say. I'm not a writer, and words seem so inadequate right now. How can I describe how much I love you? Is it even possible to describe a love like that? I don't know, but as I sit here with pen in hand, I know that I have to try. I know you like to tell the story of how I played hard to get, but when I think back on the night we first met, I think I realized even then that we were meant to be together. I remember that night clearly, just as I can recall the exact sensation of your hand in mine, and every detail of the cloudy afternoon at the beach, when you dropped to one knee and asked me to become your wife. Until you came along, I never knew how much I'd been missing. I never knew that a touch could be so meaningful, or an expression so eloquent. I never knew that a kiss could literally take my breath away. You are, and always have been, everything I've always wanted in a husband. You're kind and strong and caring and smart. You lift my spirits, and you're a better father than you know. You have a knack with children, a way of making them trust you, and I can't express the joy it has brought me to see you holding them as they fall asleep on your shoulder. My life is infinitely better for having you in it, and that's what makes all of this so hard. It's why I can't seem to find the words I need. It scares me to know that all of this will be ending soon. I'm not simply scared for me, though. I'm scared for you and our children, too. It breaks my heart to know that I'm going to cause you all such grief. But I don't know what I can do, other than to remind you of the reasons I fell in love with you in the first place, and express my sorrow at hurting you and our beautiful children. It pains me to think that your love for me will also be the source of so much anguish. But I truly believe that while love can hurt, love can also heal. And that's why I'm enclosing another letter. Please don't read it. It's not meant for you, or our families, or even our friends. I highly doubt that either of us has met the woman to whom you will give this letter. You see, this one is meant for the woman who eventually heals you. The one who makes you whole again. Right now, I know you can't imagine something like that. It might take months, it might take years, but someday you'll give that letter to another woman. Trust your instincts, just as I did on the night you first walked up to me. You'll know when and where to do that, just as you'll know which woman deserves it. And when you do, trust me when I say, that somewhere, somehow, I'll be smiling down on both of you. Love, Carly. After reading the letter again, Alex slipped it back into the envelope and returned it to the safe. Beyond the window, the sky was filled with moonlit clouds, and it glowed with an eerie incandescence. He stared upward, thinking of Carly and of Katie. Carly had told him to trust his instincts. Carly had told him that he would know what to do with the letter. And Carly, he suddenly realized, had been exactly right, about half of it anyway. He knew he wanted to give the letter to Katie. He just wasn't sure whether she was ready to receive it. Chapter 28.
Hey, Kevin, Bill gestured to him. Can you come into my office for a minute?
Kevin had almost reached his desk, and Coffee and Ramirez followed him with their eyes. His new partner, Todd, was already at his desk and offered a weak smile, but it faded quickly before Todd suddenly turned away. His head was throbbing, and he didn't want to talk to Bill first thing in the morning, but Kevin wasn't worried. He was good with witnesses and victims and knew when criminals were lying. And he made lots of arrests, and the criminals were convicted. Bill motioned for him to sit in the chair, and though Kevin didn't want to sit, he took a seat and wondered why Bill wanted him to sit because usually he stood when the two of them were talking. The pain in his temple felt as if he were being stabbed with a pencil, and for a moment, Bill simply stared. Bill finally got up and closed the door before propping himself on the edge of his desk.
How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm fine, Kevin answered. He wanted to close his eyes to lessen the pain, but he could tell that Bill was studying him.
What's up?
Bill crossed his arms.
I called you in here to let you know that we received a complaint about you.
What kind of complaint?
This is serious, Kevin. Internal affairs is involved. And as of now, you're being suspended pending an investigation.
The words sounded jumbled, making no sense at all. Not at first, anyway. But as he concentrated, he could see Bill's expression and wished he hadn't woken with a headache and didn't need so much vodka.
What are you talking about?
Bill lifted a few pages from his desk.
The Gates murder,
he said.
The little boy who was shot through the floor. Earlier this month.
I remember, Kevin said. He had pizza sauce on his forehead.
Excuse me?
Kevin blinked.
The boy. That's how we found him. It was horrible. Todd was pretty shaken up.
Bill furrowed his brow.
An ambulance was called,
he said. Kevin breathed in and out, concentrating. It came for the mom, Kevin said. She was upset, obviously, and she went after the Greek who fired the bullet. They struggled and she fell down the stairs. We called it in immediately. As far as I know, she was taken to the hospital. Bill continued to stare at him before finally setting the pages aside.
You talked to her beforehand, right?
I tried to, but she was pretty hysterical. I tried to calm her down, but she went crazy.
What else is there to tell? It's all in the report.
Bill reached for the papers on his desk again.
I saw what you wrote. But the woman is claiming that you told her to push the perp down the stairs. What?
Bill read from the pages.
She claims you were talking about God and told her, quote, the man was a sinner and deserved to be punished because the Bible says, thou shalt not kill. She says that you also told her that the guy was probably going to get probation, even though he killed her kid, so she should take matters into her own hands. Because wrongdoers deserve to be punished. Does any of this ring a bell?
Kevin could feel the blood in his cheeks.
That's ridiculous, he said. You know she's lying, right?
He expected Bill to immediately agree with him, to say that he knew internal affairs would clear him. But Bill didn't. Instead, his boss leaned forward.
What exactly did you tell her? Word for word.
I didn't tell her anything. I asked her what happened and she told me and I saw the hole in the ceiling and went upstairs and I arrested the neighbor after he admitted to firing the gun.
I cuffed him and started bringing him down the stairs. The next thing I know, she went after him.
Bill was silent, his gaze locked on Kevin.
You never talked to her about sin?
No. He held up the paper he had been reading from.
You never said the words, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord.
No.
None of this sounds familiar at all.
Kevin felt the anger rising, but forced it back down.
Nothing, it's a lie. You know how people are. She probably wants to sue the city so she can get a big payday.
Bill's jaw muscle was flexing, and it took a long time before he spoke.
Had you been drinking before you talked to the woman?
I don't know where this is coming from. No, I don't do that. I wouldn't do that.
You know my clear rate. I'm a good detective.
Kevin held out his hands, almost blind from the throbbing pain in his head.
Come on, Bill. We've worked together for years. That's why I'm talking to you, instead of firing you. Because in the past few months, you haven't been yourself. And I've been hearing rumors.
What rumors?
That you're drunk when you come into work.
It's not true.
So if I gave you a breathalyzer, you'd blow a zero, right?
Kevin could feel his heart hammering in his chest. He knew how to lie, and he was good at it. But he had to keep his voice steady.
Last night I was up late with a buddy and we were drinking. There might still be some alcohol in my system, but I'm not drunk. And I didn't drink before coming into work this morning. Or that day either. Or any day, for that matter.
Bill stared at him.
Tell me what's going on with Erin, he said.
I've already told you. She's helping a friend in Manchester. We went to the Cape just a few weeks ago.
You told Coffey that you went to a restaurant in Provincetown with Erin, but the restaurant closed 6 months ago, and there was no record of you checking into the bed and breakfast you mentioned. And no one has seen or heard from Erin in months.
Kevin felt his head filling with blood, making the pounding worse.
You checked up on me? You've been drinking on the job, and you've been lying to me.
I haven't. Stop lying to me, the captain suddenly shouted.
I can smell your breath from here.
His eyes flared anger.
And as of now, you're suspended from duty. You should call your union rep before you meet with internal affairs. Leave your gun and your badge on my desk and go home.
How long? Kevin managed to croak out.
Right now, suspension is the least of your worries.
Just so you know, I didn't say anything to that woman.
They heard you, Bill shouted. Your partner, the medical examiner, the crime scene investigators, the boyfriend.
He paused, visibly trying to regain his calm.
Everyone heard you, he said, with finality.
And all at once, Kevin felt as though he'd lost control of everything, and he knew it was all Erin's fault. Chapter 29. August rolled in, and although Alex and Katie were enjoying the hot, slow summer days they spent together, the kids were beginning to get bored. Wanting to do something unusual, Alex took Katie and the kids to see the rodeo monkeys in Wilmington. Much to Katie's disbelief, it turned out to be exactly what it sounded like. Monkeys, dressed in cowboy outfits, rode dogs and herded rams for almost an hour before a show of fireworks that rivaled the 4th of July. On their way out, Katie turned toward him with a smile. That has to be the craziest thing I've ever seen, she said, shaking her head.
And you probably thought we lacked culture in the South,
she laughed. Where do people come up with these ideas?
I have no idea, but it's a good thing I heard about it. They're in town for only a couple of days.
He scanned the parking lot for his car. Yes, it's hard to imagine how unfulfilling my life would have been had I never seen monkeys riding dogs.
The kids liked it, Alex protested.
The kids loved it, Katie agreed. But I can't figure out whether the monkeys liked it. They didn't look all that happy to me. Alex squinted at her.
I'm not sure I'd be able to tell whether a monkey was happy or not.
My point exactly, she said.
Hey, it's not my fault that there's still another month until school, and I'm just about out of new things for the kids to do.
They don't need to do something special every day.
I know, and they don't. But I don't want them watching television all the time either.
Your kids don't watch a lot of television.
That's because I take them to see the rodeo monkeys.
And next week?
That's easy. The carnival will be in town. One of those traveling things.
She smiled. Those kinds of rides always made me sick to my stomach.
And the kids love them anyway. But that reminds me, are you working next Saturday?
I'm not sure. Why?
Because I was hoping you'd come to the carnival with us.
You want me to be sick to my stomach?
You don't have to go on the rides if you don't want to, but I would like to ask a favor.
What's that?
I was hoping you'd watch the kids later that evening. Joyce's daughter is flying into Raleigh, and Joyce asked if I could drive her to the airport to pick her up. Joyce doesn't like to drive at night.
I'd be glad to watch them.
It'll have to be at my place, so they go to bed at a reasonable hour.
She looked at him. Your place? I never get to spend time at your house.
Yeah, well.
He didn't seem to know what to say next, and she smiled. No problem, she said. That sounds like fun. Maybe we'll watch a movie together and have some popcorn. Alex walked in silence for a few steps before he asked,
Do you ever want to have kids?
Katie hesitated. I'm not sure, she finally said. I haven't really thought about it.
Ever?
She shook her head. In Atlantic City, I was too young. With Kevin, I couldn't bear the idea. And I've had my mind on other things the last few months.
But if you did think about it, he persisted.
I still don't know. I guess it would depend on a lot of things.
Like what?
Like whether I was married, for starters. And as you know, I can't get married.
Aaron can't get married, he said. But Katie probably could. She has a driver's license, remember?
Katie took a few steps in silence. She might be able to, but she wouldn't do it unless she met the right guy. He laughed and slipped his arm around her.
I know that working at Ivan's was just what you needed at the time you took the job, but did you ever think about doing something else?
Like what?
I don't know. Going back to college, getting a degree, finding a job that you really love.
What makes you think I don't love waiting tables?
Nothing,
he shrugged.
I was just curious as to what you might be interested in.
She thought about it. Growing up, like every other girl I knew, I loved animals, and I thought I'd be a veterinarian. But there's no way I'd be willing to go back to school for that now. It would take too long.
There are other ways to work with animals. You could train rodeo monkeys, for instance.
I don't think so. I still haven't decided whether the monkeys liked it.
You've got a soft spot for those monkeys, don't you?
Who wouldn't? I mean, who on earth came up with that idea in the first place?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard you laughing.
I didn't want to make the rest of you feel bad. He laughed again, pulling her closer. Ahead of them, Josh and Kristen were already slumped against the Jeep. She knew they would probably fall asleep before they got back to Southport.
You never answered my question, Alex said. About what you want to do with your life.
Maybe my dreams aren't that complicated. Maybe I think that a job is just a job.
What does that mean?
Maybe I don't want to be defined by what I do. Maybe I'd like to be defined by what I am. He considered the response.
Okay, he said. Then who do you want to be?
Do you really want to know?
I wouldn't have asked you otherwise.
She stopped and met his gaze. I'd like to be a wife and mother, she finally said. He frowned.
But I thought you said you weren't sure whether you wanted to have children.
She cocked her head, looking as beautiful as he'd ever seen. What does that have to do with anything? The kids fell asleep before they reached the highway. It wasn't a long trip back, maybe half an hour, but neither Alex nor Katie wanted to risk waking the kids with their conversation. Instead, they were content to hold hands in silence as they made the drive back to Southport. As Alex pulled to a stop in front of her house, Katie spotted Joe sitting on the steps of her porch, as if waiting for her. In the darkness, she wasn't sure whether Alex recognized her, but at that moment, Kristen stirred, and he turned around in his seat to make sure she hadn't woken up. Katie leaned over and kissed him. I should probably talk to her, Katie whispered.
Who, Kristen?
My neighbor, Katie smiled, gesturing over her shoulder. Or rather, she probably wants to talk to me.
Oh, he nodded. Okay.
He glanced toward Joe's porch and back again.
I had a great time tonight.
I did too. He kissed her before she opened the door, and when Alex pulled out of the driveway, she started toward Joe's house. Joe smiled and waved, and Katie felt herself relax slightly. They hadn't talked since that night in the bar, and as she approached, Joe stood and came to the railing. First off, I want to apologize for the way I talked to you, she said without preamble. I was out of line. I was wrong. And it won't happen again. Katie climbed the steps to her porch and sat down, waving Joe to a spot next to her on the top step. It's okay, she said. I wasn't mad. I still feel terrible about it, Joe said, her remorse obvious. I don't know what got into me. I do, Katie said. It's obvious. You care about them, and you want to watch out for them. I still shouldn't have talked to you the way I did. That's why I haven't been around. It embarrassed me, and I knew you'd never forgive me. Katie touched her arm. I appreciate the apology, but it's not necessary. You actually made me realize some important things about myself.
Yeah?
Katie nodded. And just so you know, I think I'm going to stay in Southport for a while.
I saw you driving the other day.
Hard to believe, isn't it? I still don't feel comfortable behind the wheel.
You will, she said. And it's better than the bike.
I still ride my bike every day, she said. I can't afford a car.
I'd say you could use mine, but it's back in the shop again. Things always breaking down. I'd probably be better off with a bike.
Be careful what you wish for.
Now you sound like me again.
Joe nodded toward the road. I'm happy for you and Alex. And the kids. You're good for them, you know. How can you be so sure? Because I can see the way he looks at you. And the way you look at all of them. We've spent a lot of time together, Katie hedged. Joe shook her head.
It's more than that.
The two of you look like you're in love. She squirmed a bit under Katie's blushing gaze.
Okay, I'll admit it. Even if you haven't seen me, let's just say that I've seen the way the two of you kiss when you say goodbye.
You spy on us? Katie pretended to be outraged.
Of course, Joe snorted. How else am I supposed to occupy myself? It's not like anything else interesting ever happens around here.
She paused. You do love him, don't you? Katie nodded. And I love the kids, too. I'm so glad. Joe clasped her hands together, prayer style. Katie paused. Did you know his wife? Yes, Joe said. Katie stared down the road. What was she like? I mean, Alex has talked about her, and I can sort of picture in my mind what she was like. Joe didn't let her finish. Based on what I've seen, she was a lot like you.
And I mean that in a good way.
She loved Alex, and she loved the kids. They were the most important things in her life. That's really all you have to know about her. Do you think she would have liked me? Yes, Joe said. I'm sure she would have loved you. Chapter 30. August, and Boston was sweltering. Kevin vaguely remembered seeing the ambulance outside the Feldman's home, but he hadn't thought much about it because the Feldmans were bad neighbors and he didn't care about them. Only now did he realize that Gladys Feldman had died, and cars were parked along both sides of the street. Kevin had been suspended for 2 weeks, and he didn't like cars parked in front of his house. But people were in town for the funeral, and he lacked the energy to ask any of them to move. He'd showered infrequently since he'd been suspended, and he sat on the porch, drinking straight from the bottle, watching people walk in and out of the Feldman's house. He knew the funeral was later in the afternoon, and people were at the Feldman's house because they would be going to the funeral as a group. People clustered like flocks of geese whenever there was a funeral. He hadn't talked to Bill or Coffee or Ramirez or Todd or Amber or even his parents. There were no pizza boxes on the living room floor and no leftover Chinese in the refrigerator because he hadn't been hungry. Vodka was enough, and he drank until the Feldman's house was a blur. Across the street, he saw a woman walk out of their house to smoke a cigarette. She was wearing a black dress, and Kevin wondered if she knew the Feldmans yelled at neighborhood kids. He watched the woman because he didn't want to watch the Home and Garden channel on the television. Erin used to watch that channel, but she ran away to Philadelphia and called herself Erica, and then she disappeared and he'd been suspended from his job, but before that, he'd been a good detective. The woman in black finished her cigarette and dropped it in the grass and stepped on it. She scanned the street and noticed him sitting on the porch. She hesitated before crossing the street toward him. He didn't know her, had never seen her before. He didn't know what she wanted, but he put the bottle down and climbed down the porch steps. She stopped on the sidewalk out front. "Are you Kevin Tierney?" the woman asked. "Yes," he said. and his voice sounded strange because he hadn't spoken in days. I'm Karen Feldman, she said. My parents live across the street, Larry and Gladys Feldman. She paused, but Kevin said nothing, and she went on. I was just wondering if Aaron was planning to attend the funeral. He stared at her.
Aaron,
he finally said. Yes, my mom and dad used to love it when she came by to visit. She used to make them pies, and sometimes she helped them clean up, especially once my mom started getting sick. Lung cancer. It was awful. She shook her head. Is Aaron around? I've been hoping to meet her. The funeral starts at 2.
No, she's not. She's helping a sick friend in Manchester, he said.
Oh, well, okay then. That's too bad. I'm sorry to have bothered you. His mind began to clear, and he noticed that she was about to leave.
I'm sorry for your loss, by the way. I told Aaron, and she's upset that she can't be here. Did you get the flowers?
Oh, probably. I haven't checked.
The funeral home is full of them.
No big deal.
I just wish Aaron could have been here.
Me too. I've always wanted to meet her. My mom told me that she reminded her of Katie.
Katie?
My younger sister.